Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're revisiting India in light of the recent upward revision of the country's GDP, which suggests that its economy is now growing at a faster rate than China's. But while the stock market has been robust and the rupee has outperformed pretty much all other currencies barring the Swiss franc, there have been setbacks for Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his new government. So what is the real picture and what challenges are in store for India? We start with Hartmut Issel, head of the Wealth Management CIO unit responsible for APAC credit and equities at UBS. We asked him if India is indeed growing at this rate and what the implications are if it is.
It's a general issue with data, oftentimes an emerging market, but certainly within India we have 50% of the economy really captured, so all the rest is pure guesswork, and that doesn't make it any easier to come up with a very accurate figure. And lastly, point I would like to make is for me, or I guess in general for analysts, it's not so much necessarily about the actual number, but more about the direction that we're being given. It also seems to me, when I speak to people on the ground, when I look at data, it doesn't really feel like necessarily the growth here is at 8%. And what it certainly has confirmed to us, this number as well, is if we break it down in into areas where the growth is coming from, nonetheless, one verdict is very clear: the investment side of things is very slow. So the new numbers, it is a little bit higher. It's starting to show a little bit of growth. Now you can argue about it, but in essence, the investment part, no matter how you slice and dice it, the investment part is slow, and it needs to be addressed as a new investment cycle. That is the inescapable conclusion from the old data series as well as the new one.
Rahul Bedi is a journalist and commentator and regular Monocle 24 contributor in Delhi. What's he made of recent developments?
Well, the projections are that India will marginally overtake China over the next year or so, and the revision that has taken place in the GDP figures has really been a case of clever accounting, which is what a lot of analysts say. So they've in fact ramped up the economic growth, and ironically, the new methods of calculation have also put the previous government in a good light, because if you apply the same formula and the same template to the previous government's years in office, it shows them that they did not as bad as they seem to have done.
Gautam Chaucharia is strategist and head of the research team at UBS India. What does he make of the revised GDP figures and growth rates that outstrip those of China?
The upward revision is a more statistical exercise in terms of changing the methodology towards a more globally accepted methodology, and that shows India's growth rates being ahead of China. But the bigger issue is the cyclical recovery playing out in India. So over last year and a half, or even 2 years from the earlier government's time frame, they put in measures to drive the cyclical recovery in India, and that has been playing through. And then last year, we had a new government come in, and a new government with a majority after 30 years and with a political mandate to drive growth and an economy-backed mandate. So that's what's playing through right now over the last few months, rather than just looking at the new GDP revised data series.
Milan Vaishnav is an associate in the South Asia program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace in Washington, D.C.
I think it's fair to say that nobody really fully understands how India's new GDP numbers work. Constructed and what they mean. The revisions that we've seen to growth have been so large, and they're so against a lot of the micro data we have on what's actually happening on the ground, that many of us who study and look at India are quite puzzled. Having said that, I do think it's fairly clear that the economy, when you look at overall trends, is headed in the right direction. India has had just a tremendous turnaround in just the last 18 months. I mean, last summer people were talking about the fragile five, emerging market economies who were sort of falling apart, and India was really one of the foremost countries mentioned. And now, you know, just a year later, its deficits are going down. The rupee has stabilized. Inflation has come down remarkably and growth seems to be coming around. And of course, you now have a government which is pro-business and has a majority in parliament. So I think all of those things are giving people renewed optimism about where the Indian economy is going to be heading.
Milan Vaishnav there. What are the key considerations in terms of fiscal and monetary policy for a country growing at this rate? Well, investors are certainly wary. Here's Rahul Bedi.
Again, investors are a little wary because the new government has been in office for about 9 months, but there's very little that has changed on the ground in terms of ease of doing business, the infrastructure development, the investment policies, and even the Indian currency against the US dollar or even against the sterling. So there has been a lot of announcements made, but very little implementation has taken place now. But having said that, the new budget is coming on the 28th of February, and everybody is watching that keenly as to what signs are going to emerge from it, whether it's going to be a positive budget, whether it's going to be a populist budget, whether it's going to be a political budget. So I think the key lies in the next 2 weeks.
What are the implications for fiscal and monetary policy, according to Milan Vaishnav?
I think in terms of fiscal policy, this government has laid out a pretty aggressive timetable for reducing the deficit. That is a timetable which was first put forward by the previous government. This government has adopted it in whole. So that is going to give them relatively little wiggle room unless they decide to take on some of the tough, tough issues related to reforming subsidies, divesting of state-owned enterprises, of really finding creative ways to collect tax revenue. So that's a big fiscal agenda, but I think it's eminently plausible if this government is willing to take tough choices. We've seen that the Reserve Bank of India under Governor Raghuram Rajan has been very cautious, has been very hawkish on inflation. I expect that to continue, but it looks like we're going into a period now where we're going to see an easing, a slight easing of monetary policy going forward.
India's been operating in a high inflation environment for the last couple of years, which has made a significant difference on both fronts, according to Gautam Chaucharia.
Both fiscal and monetary policy over the last 2 years odd has been tight. India has had faced high inflation environment, which also became a political issue. And the original target was to bring inflation under control, which we are finally seeing happening over the last 6 months. And now we are seeing some signs of a shift in the fiscal and monetary policy towards a more growth-biased agenda. We have seen the central bank already do the first rate cut. Obviously, the monetary transmission takes time. And the budget is, India's budget is awaited at the end of February. And we do expect the government to take first steps towards having some kind of public spending, a sort of a fiscal stimulus without abandoning the fiscal consolidation agenda, but definitely a stimulus to kickstart India's investment cycle and therefore growth, a big growth catalyst.
As Gautam explains, all eyes are on the administration of Narendra Modi, and we'll consider the political challenges that lie ahead next on The Bulletin with UBS. Despite the good numbers, these have been testing times for Narendra Modi and his BJP party. In particular, there was a significant setback in the Delhi regional election. Were the BJP's terrible numbers there an isolated issue, or are they indicative of a wider worry? Rahul Bedi.
Well, most definitely it's been a broader concern because they really got a hammering in Delhi. Out of 70 seats in Delhi, the BJP got just 3 and the opposition party got 67. Which by any amount, any accounts, is a drubbing. Modi is worried. The BJP, which is his party, is also worried. But again, I think Modi is a highly electable commodity even now because there is no other opposition nationally. The Congress party is more or less over. Congress party got 0 seats in Delhi. So Modi is still can win elections, and his name is a winnable commodity for the moment. But that would easily change when the next big state elections come around by the end of the year.
Hartmut Issel is a little more cautious when it comes to assessing the impact of the Delhi vote.
I don't think that small election like really Delhi was, in terms of national seats, is very, very small. That is necessarily a setback, but it is starting to become more complex, more difficult for the next wave of reforms. Or what do I mean by next wave? The first steps, I wouldn't necessarily even call them reforms, it's just basically administrative measures to get back to where India was before 2010, say, which was especially on the approval side for industrial projects, things like mining, things like factories of all sorts. The number of new investments in those has basically seen a lower load than even at the worst time of the financial crisis.
So, a major setback or an isolated incident? According to Milan Vaishnav, it's a bit of both.
Delhi is a huge city by any standard, but it's only home to about 1.5% of India's population. So in that sense, it is relatively limited. And I think state elections in India are typically fought on local issues, especially in a place like Delhi, which really is a city state. Having said that, I do think it sends a wake-up call to the Modi administration in order for them to really start to hone in on their economic agenda. I mean, this government has a mandate to get India's economy back on track. That is why they won this historic victory in May of 2014. And I think people are starting to feel a little bit antsy that they haven't seen enough change on the ground. And so I think it was a setback, but the true test is going to come just about a week from now. On February 28th, this government will present its first proper budget since coming into office, and a lot of people, both in India as well as abroad, are going to be looking at that budget to find out what this government's roadmap for growth really looks like.
Given the Delhi state elections and other domestic challenges, how complex is the political landscape in India? Gautam Chaucharia takes up the story.
So politically, the landscape in India is always complex. But Delhi is a very small state. It's less than 3% in terms of India's political size as far as the parliament goes. And our view is that that's unlikely to make any impact as far as the Mr. Modi's government's policy direction is concerned. And they have made similar comments over the last few days that they're going to stick to a growth agenda. And an agenda where they are looking to create jobs in India. And that's the view of the political economy in India, that they view the country as a young, aspirational country. And therefore, the political mandate is to create jobs and create growth rather than the old freebie-style politics.
A key frame of reference in all of this has been India's GDP growth compared to that of its neighbour, China. But does setting China as the benchmark for India serve the country well? Or is it a flawed idea from the outset? Hartmut Issel again.
Well, I'm not sure there is necessarily a right or a wrong benchmark. What I would just argue is that you need to bear in mind an economy almost five times the size is bound to grow slower eventually than a smaller economy, even though they have the same number in terms of population.
And we also asked Milan Vaishnav whether comparing India to China is worthwhile.
It's not the right benchmark, but it's going to be the benchmark regardless, for obvious reasons. These two countries are neighbors. They are the two largest countries in the world, of course, in the region. They are two of the biggest economies. So whether we like it or not, India is always going to be compared to China. Now, I don't think that we should get too caught up into this comparison because I think they are two economies at very different places. If you look at per capita income, if you look at manufacturing, if you look at levels of investment, India is just, way behind where China is. So India needs to do what's right for India. And of course, let's not forget that the challenges India faces are unique. It is, after all, a democracy. It has a functional judiciary. It is not an authoritarian country like China. So there is, some would say, a penalty that India has to pay for being a democracy. But I think that's one that many Indians would be more than happy to pay.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look ahead at the key challenges for Modi and for India and ask whether they are political, economic, structural, or in fact all of these. When assessing the challenges ahead for India and its economy, there's really only one place to start, according to Milan Vaishnav, and that is how hard it still is to actually do business in India.
I think if we're talking about the economy, there's no need to beat around the bush. India is an incredibly difficult place to do business. It is very hard for foreign investors to operate. It's very hard for domestic entrepreneurs to open businesses, to get licenses, permits. That really has to be at the center of Modi's agenda. What does that mean in practice? It means loosening some of the very onerous regulations on entrepreneurs. It means creating a more hospitable environment for foreign direct investment. We've seen some limited moves on that front, but it also means investing in productive things like infrastructure and roads and healthcare and education. And on all of those fronts, India's record is actually quite poor.
Does Rahul Bedi go along with this interpretation?
There's a lot of corruption which Modi has not been able to clean up, and also a lot of the systems. I think the World Bank has ranked India about 139 out of 160 countries of doing business in. So that is, Modi hasn't managed to reduce that. So politically, Modi is strong. Politically, Modi is going to probably expand his footprint over the next 6 months or even a year. But he has to improve the economy. He has to get investment into the country, without which he's likely to flounder, and so is the BJP.
So we've seen good numbers, whether it's GDP, the equity market, or the rupee. But are there other factors to consider? Here with his conclusions from the client perspective is UBS's Hartmut Issel.
Issues to be mindful of. I think it could still be the currency. You know, I know it has been a bit more stable recently, but that doesn't necessarily mean you can always rely on the rupee not shaving, maybe 2-3% here and there off the performance. So currency, I think, still is an item to be watched. And of course, if Modi really hits major obstacles, and let's also remember, some of these legislation measures he can actually not do, because even though he has a strong majority in the lower house, he does not own the upper house and will not for years, as it seems. So it's not like he can just walk through any legislation he likes. So he needs also the opposition parties and some of the bigger legislations behind him. And there's a potential source of risk that I think investors are well advised to watch.
Hartmut Issel there, bringing us to the end of this 20th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance, every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.